I'm Donnelly.
Yeah, I know. This is Wilkins, Schrader, and Troy.
Preacher nodded to the men.
The boss didn't tell me what we were doing this afternoon. I suppose one of you fellas would explain it to me?
Only in good time. We're waiting on some other fellas. Sit down and have a drink with us, Donnelly.
Over the next half hour, three more men showed up. Dugan introduced them as Marshall, Statler, and Hellman.
All right, I reckon we can go.
Preacher was a little puzzled. Eight men, counting him, weren't exactly enough to take over a riverboat. They ought to have at least twice that many for such an attack. He couldn't very well say anything, though, since he still wasn't supposed to know what the plan was. A short time later, the group emerged from the tavern.
Where's your horse?
Up yonder.
Preacher nodded toward the hitch rail where horse was tied.
What'd you leave him way up there for?
What, you think I'd leave my horse in front of a place full of cutthroats and thieves like this?
Yeah, you might have a point there. I reckon we're lucky our horses are still here.
I believe in being careful.
Preacher walked up to where he had left horse, untied the reins, and swung up into the saddle. It took only a moment to rejoin the other men. They rode south along the riverfront and eventually left the settlement behind them. It was peaceful out here, with the river flowing majestically to their left. They had covered several miles, and St. Louis was well out of sight behind them when Preacher spotted several riders coming toward them.
They'll be the rest of the boys. The boss didn't want us to all get together in town. Thought we might draw too much attention if we did. The boss is mighty smart that way.
There were seven men in the second group.
You got the boats?
Yeah, just like you said. Four canoes. We hit the boat right at the bend where the channel brings it close to the shore. Come paddling out there like a war party of damn redskins.
Preacher looked around at the men. They had the look and stink of towns and cities about them. They might be tough, but they damn sure weren't frontiersmen. He doubted if any of them had ever even seen an engine that wasn't tame. They didn't know anything about war parties, that was for sure.
Hey, Dugan, don't you reckon it's about time you tell me what we're doing here?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Hear that, Donnelly?
Yeah, what is it?
Steamboat round the bend. When it gets here, that's when the shooting starts.
Preacher and Dugan followed the rest of the group as they rode hurriedly toward the bend of the Mississippi, about a quarter of a mile downstream.
Well, let me get this straight. We're going to take over this riverboat?
That's right. It's just a cargo boat, no passengers, and it's the cargo we want. We pick off the pilot and the captain in the pilot house by shooting from shore, then board her, get the drop on the rest of the crew, and run the boat aground on the bank. We got wagons and drivers waiting. Won't take long to unload all the cotton the boat's carrying and cart it away.
That'll be worth a pretty penny, I reckon. Did Mr. Beaumont put you up to this?
Damn right. Told you he was smart.
The riverboat was almost at the bend when Preacher and the other men reached the four canoes pulled up on the bank.
Ha ha! Three men to a canoe. Donnelly, you'll be the fourth man in the first canoe. Troy and I'll stay here on shore and pick off the captain and pilot.
Now, I'm a mighty good shot with a rifle, if I do say so myself. You might want me to stay here with you, Dugan.
Do what I told you. Unless you want to back out of the deal completely, and I'll tell the boss if you do.
Now, take it easy.
Take it easy. I'll go along with the orders. I was just trying to help.
Then move. Here comes the damn riverboat.
It was true. The big sidewheeler was coming into view around the bend, close to the near shore because of the way the channel ran. The would-be robbers hurriedly climbed into the canoes and shoved off. Preacher found himself right up front in the lead canoe, the most dangerous spot to be when the attack got underway. But he didn't care about that. He knew that the men working for Jesse and Cleve had to be somewhere close by. No doubt they would strike at any moment. In the meantime, though, the pilot and the captain of the riverboat were in deadly danger. Preacher had snatched up one of the paddles in the bottom of the canoe, laid the flintlock across the narrow boat in front of him, and dug the paddle in the water like the other men. Their efforts sent the canoe cutting across the river's surface toward the steamboat. Preacher saw the name Harry Fulton painted on the boat's bow. with St. Louis, Missouri underneath. The big paddle wheels on the sides of the boat suddenly lurched to a stop. Somebody on board must have spotted the river pirates approaching and ordered the engine stopped, but it was too late. The boat's momentum carried it forward against the current for a moment as it slowed, and the canoes arrowed toward it. Preacher dropped his paddle at his feet, snatched up his rifle, and stood up as he turned back toward the shore.
Hey! What the hell do you think you're doing?
Canoe rocked back and forth, thrown off balance by Preacher's movements, but he ignored that and drew a bead on Dugan as he eared back the flintlock's hammer. 50 yards away on shore, Dugan's coonskin cap leaped into the air as the ball from Preacher's rifle smashed into his head and dropped him like a rock.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
Powder smoke spurted from a clump of trees that grew down close to the water. On the near bank, Troy went down, still without firing a shot.
Oh shit, I'd best get out of here.
Preacher dove deep and kicked hard to get away from the area where the shots from the far shore were cutting into the water. Jesse and Cleve might have warned their men to try not to kill Preacher, but in the heat of battle, sometimes it was hard to be careful. He stayed under as long as he could, then began kicking toward the surface. Preacher saw the Harry Fulton off to his left, now drifting slowly downstream with its engine stopped. Two of the canoes were overturned, and the other one appeared to be sinking, probably shot full of holes. Several bodies floated in the river near the canoes. Two of Beaumont's men were trying to swim to the near shore. More shots doomed their efforts. They jerked in the water and then slowed as reddish streamers of blood drifted away from them. The men came to a stop and began to float face down. That left Preacher as the only apparent survivor of the group that had tried to take over the riverboat. He swam toward the Harry Fulton as a flat-bottomed skiff with several men in it pushed off from the far shore. The men paddled out to rendezvous with the riverboat. Preacher was closer and he got there first. Three men were waiting for him on deck, the captain and a couple of crewmen, all of them holding pistols. They covered him as he tossed his empty rifle onto the deck and then caught hold of one of the fenders and used it to help him climb on board.
Don't try anything, you thieving bastard.
Now, you may not have noticed, Captain, but I reckon I saved your life a few minutes ago. One of those fellows on shore was drawing a bead on you when I blew a hole in his head.
But I thought you were one of the river pirates.
Yeah, well, so did they.
The skiff had now reached the riverboat.
Howdy. Looked like you needed a little help there.
The captain nodded toward Preacher.
Keep this man covered.
He turned towards the men on the skiff.
Indeed we do, sir. We are much obliged to you. Did you just happen to be traveling along when these scoundrels attacked us?
Nope. We were here for the same thing they were. Now, put this boat ashore so we can start unloading that cotton you got on deck.
The captain of the Harry Fulton stared goggle-eyed down the barrel of the pistol that menaced him.
You're pirates too?
That's right. There's a dozen men on shore with rifles pointing at you and your men right now, Captain. You better do as you're told.
Are you going to kill me and my crew?
Nope. All we want is cotton.
Very well.
The captain motioned for his men to drop their guns, then cupped his hands around his mouth.
Ahead one quarter! Put her ashore!
Preacher had watched the exchange with interest. Now he stood up.
You're the fella we were supposed to watch out for, aren't you?
That's right. You came mighty near to hit me with one of them shots, too.
Hard to be too careful in the middle of a shooting scrap. And you're not dead, are you?
No, I reckon not.
You double-crossed the men you were with? That makes you even worse than them, and I don't care if you did save my life.
Yeah, well, you think whatever you want, mister. Just do what you're told and be grateful you're alive. I know I am.
It didn't take all that long to run the boat aground and unload the cargo. Some of Jesse's men had crossed the river before the attack even began and gotten the drop on the drivers Beaumont had hired. Those drivers had been sent packing. They had been glad to be given the chance to flee and save their lives. So it was Jesse's men who brought the wagons to the riverbank and unloaded the cotton onto them. Then they drove off, taking the valuable cargo with them. Preacher didn't know what Jessie planned to do with the cotton. She'd probably sell it, although she would have to be careful not to let Beaumont get wind of the transaction. Preacher figured she was smart enough to be able to handle that. Some of Jesse's men took the horses left behind by Dugan and the others. As Preacher got ready to mount up on horse and ride back to St. Louis, the man who'd led Jesse's group came up to him.
What are you going to do now, mister? Go back to Beaumont's place?
That's right.
What will you tell him?
The truth. Some of it anyway. We got bushwhacked and I'm the only one who got away.
You reckon he's going to believe that?
He won't have any reason not to.
Well, I suppose it's your business. Seems to me like you're playing a mighty dangerous game, though.
Preacher just shrugged. The man was right, after all. If Beaumont found out the truth, things could get bad in a hurry. But that was a risk Preacher was prepared to run. The danger had always been there, right from the start. Preacher swung up into the saddle and rode north along the river. Preacher hipped around in the saddle to look back in the direction of the shots. He couldn't see anything. Bends of the river and the trees that grew along its banks hid the riverboat from his view. Preacher turned horse around and watched as black smoke began to rise in the sky, blooming and billowing. As Preacher came around a bend a few minutes later, he saw that the riverboat had drifted away from the shore and into the middle of the river. It was burning now. Flames leaping up at the base of the column of smoke. The blaze stretched from one end of the vessel to the other, and it was burning so fiercely that Preacher knew that the boat was doomed. He knew as well that there was no one left alive on board to fight the fire. Those shots he'd heard had been Jesse's men gunning down the captain and crew. He didn't know why they would have done such a thing, but he was sure that that's what had happened. Jesse's men were all gone now, putting distance between them and the murders they had committed. There was nothing Preacher could do to stop them. It was too late. Too late to do anything except turn horse around and start again towards St. Louis with a bitter, sour taste filling his mouth. It was late enough by the time Preacher got back to the settlement that he didn't go to Jesse's place. He headed straight for Beaumont's house instead. When he got there and rode around back to the carriage house, he found Lorenzo waiting out there with a worried frown on his face.
Is something wrong?
You damn right there's something wrong, boy. The boss is so mad he's fixing to chew nails. Something happened today whilst you was gone. I don't know what it was, but it was bad enough to make him half crazy. I got my ass out of there before he decided to shoot it off.
Nobody tried to kill the boss, did they? I mean, it's my job to stop things like that from happening, but he's the one who told me to go do whatever I wanted to do this afternoon.
No, everything was fine till a little while ago. I brung Miss Jessie over here, and I reckon her and the boss had themselves a fine old time. But when I got back from taking her back to her house, there was a fella here I didn't know. I heard Mr. Beaumont yelling at him, and then that fella, he went scurrying out of here like the devil his own self was after him. I reckon that's about the size of it, too. When I tried to ask the boss what was wrong, he about bit my head off.
Lorenzo frowned as he looked at Preacher, who had started to unsaddle horse.
Hey, boy, you look like you've been dunked in the river.
Yeah, I have been. And I got something to tell the boss that ain't gonna make him real happy, neither. I got a feeling he's already heard about it, though, from the way you said he's been acting.
One of the drivers who'd been chased off from the wagons must have come back here and told Beaumont what had happened. The man might not have known all the details, but he would have been well aware that the theft of the cotton from the riverboat hadn't gone as planned. That by itself would have been enough to cause an explosion of Beaumont's hair-trigger temper. Preacher took his time about tending the horse, as if he were reluctant to go into the house. As a matter of fact, he was, but not because he was afraid of Beaumont, even though that's probably what Lorenzo thought was going on. He was reluctant because he thought if he came face to face with Beaumont right now, he might pull out his knife and bury it in the man's chest just to end the terrible business right here and now. All the way back to St. Louis, Preacher had struggled to come to grips with the fact that some of the blood spilled from the captain and the crew of the Harry Fulton was on his hands. If he hadn't come to St. Louis and started this business of posing as Jim Donnelly, he wouldn't have thrown in with Jesse and Cleve. He wouldn't have gotten stuck in the middle of a war between the two of them and Beaumont. Preacher knew the attack set up by Jesse and Cleve would have taken place today, whether he was involved or not. But he had thought long and hard about it, and the only reason he could see for the murders of the captain and crew was to keep his secret safe. The drivers with the wagons who worked for Beaumont had been let go with their lives because they had never seen Preacher and didn't know he'd betrayed Dugan and the other river pirates. But the captain and crew had seen him. Somebody, either Jesse or Cleve, had ordered that they be killed and the riverboat burned, just to make sure there were no survivors who could talk. All to keep Preacher safe so they could continue using him against Beaumont. That knowledge was a damn bitter pill to swallow. Preacher didn't really blame himself for those murders. He hadn't pulled the trigger or set the riverboat on fire. But his presence had escalated things to the point that someone believed wholesale slaughter was necessary.
You going in there?
Got to. Mr. Beaumont's expecting me back.
Well, I'm staying out here with the horses where it's safe.
Yeah, it probably ain't a bad idea.
Preacher stepped in through the back door of Beaumont's house.
God damn it! Son of a bitch!
Damnation. He sounds miffed, all right.
When Preacher reached the upstairs hallway, he approached the open door carefully. It was possible Beaumont had a gun in there, and if he was loco enough, he might take a shot at anybody who poked his head inside.
Hey, boss! It's me, Donnelly!
Donnelly! What the hell happened downriver? I sent you to look out for my interests.
We were ambushed, boss. Riflemen were waiting in the trees on the far bank when we tried to stop that riverboat. Their first volley wiped out Dugan and most of the rest of the boys before we even knew what was going on, and then they picked off the rest of the bunch.
But not you. You're still alive.
Only because they figured I was dead, I reckon. I could swim pretty good, so when the canoe I was in tipped over, I dove as deep in the river as I could and swam underwater for a good ways. Those bushwhackers must have thought I was either hit by one of their shots or drowned or both of them. When I come up for air, I could still hear them shooting, but they weren't aiming at me.
So you hid like a coward while everyone else was killed?
Well, now, I didn't see how I'd do a damn bit of good to get myself killed, too. There were more than a dozen of those bastards. Hell, maybe as many as 20 or 25 of them. One man wouldn't have stood a chance against all them.
Yeah, well, I suppose you're right about that. What happened after the ambush?
Well, I found a place downstream where a tree fell over in the water, and I used it for cover while I watched what was going on. Some of those fellows who'd been laying in wait for us paddled out to the riverboat in a skiff. They took it over. They had the captain at gunpoint, so he had to do what they said. He put the boat ashore just like you planned for Dugan and the rest of us to do. And some wagons come up, and they unloaded the cargo onto them.
I talked to one of the drivers I hired. He said some men with guns got the drop on them and stole the wagons from them. That's all he knew, because they had to either get out of there or be killed. I was hoping that not everything had gone wrong, but I had a feeling that it had.
Oh, sure enough. Dugan and the rest of the men are dead. The cotton's gone. And that ain't all of it.
What else could there be?
After the wagons left with the cotton, those bushwhackers murdered everybody on the riverboat and set it on fire.
My God, why would they do such a thing?
A clean slate, I reckon. No witnesses left behind.
I suppose. I've never worried about anyone getting hurt if they got in my way, but to wipe out a whole riverboat crew like that in cold blood?
Yeah. You have any idea who could do such a thing, boss?
No, but I'm gonna find out. Whoever they are, they can't keep something this big a secret for very long. I'll find out. And when I do, they'll pay. Oh, by God, they'll pay.
Well, now, if there's anything I can do to help...
Don't worry, Jim. I'll let you know. I'm sorry I sent you into that trap.
Well, now, you didn't know somebody was double-crossing you?
No. And that's exactly what happened. Someone knew my plans and hired those men to steal the cotton right out from under me. That's the only way it could have happened.
Well, Dugan or one of those other fellows could have talked too much in a tavern about what they were going to do. Some fellas get a little too much whiskey in them, they don't know when to shut up.
I suppose that's possible, and if that's what happened, they've already paid for their carelessness with their lives. But I'm not convinced, Jim. I think whoever planned this may still be out there plotting against me. I'm gonna need your help looking into this. You and Lorenzo may be the only ones I can trust. And if there's something you want to do for me, Jim...
Oh, you name it, boss.
Whenever I find out who's to blame for this, I'm gonna give you the privilege of killing him. Or her.
Preacher didn't like the sounds of that. Beaumont might already suspect Jesse.
Some of those whores at Jesse's place are always sneaking around. There's no telling what they might have overheard. I don't trust any of them, especially that bitch Cassandra.
Oh, I still think it's more likely to have been Dugan or one of his men to blame.
You leave the thinking to me. I'm glad you survived, Jim. I've come to depend on you.
Oh, I ain't done all that much.
You saved my life that first night, and you've done everything I've asked of you since then. Together, we'll get to the bottom of this. In the meantime, why don't you go get cleaned up? Those clothes are probably still pretty clammy after you got dunked in the river like that.
Yeah, they're mighty damp. You going out tonight, boss?
I think I could use a few drinks. We'll go to Dupree's later.
I'll be ready.
Preacher went to the servants' quarter in the rear of the house. He and Lorenzo were the only ones who lived there. Beaumont's cook and housekeeper just came in during the day. And the old black man wasn't there at the moment. He was probably still lying low out in the carriage house. Preacher peeled out of the damp clothes and washed up, then dressed in fresh duds. He had lost his hat in the river and would have to see about getting a new one, but that could wait. He couldn't keep unwelcome thoughts from crowding into his head. Most of them had to do with the wanton murder of the riverboat crew, but he also couldn't help but think of Jessie. Had she actually ordered that slaughter? That seemed to be the most likely answer. She had the most to gain, at least potentially, by taking whatever steps were necessary to protect Preacher's identity. But the fact that she was a beautiful woman didn't really mean anything in the long run. Preacher had known beautiful women in the past who had turned out to be as treacherous and deadly as black widow spiders. Beaumont seemed to be his usual, charming, affable self again by the time they were ready to go to Dupree's that evening. All traces of the furious man he had been earlier in the day had vanished.
We'll be stopping by Mrs. Hobson's house on the way to Dupree's.
Preacher nodded. He knew that Mrs. Luella Hobson was a wealthy widow Beaumont sometimes squired around town. She was the short, curvaceous, blonde Preacher had seen with Beaumont the first night he'd watched his quarry visit Dupree's. He suspected that Beaumont was planning to swindle her out of her money at some point, and in the meantime, she was a woman with quite healthy and sometimes unusual appetites, according to the hints Beaumont had dropped. As the carriage rolled through the streets of St. Louis, Lorenzo half turned to Preacher, who sat beside him on the driver's seat.
Appears the boss ain't foaming at the mouth no more.
Yeah, well, I reckon he's still plenty upset about what happened this afternoon, but you're right, he ain't out of his head about it no more.
What exactly did happen this afternoon?
How much do you know about the boss's business?
More than I want to sometimes.
You probably don't want to know about this. Let's just say he had something planned for this afternoon and it went bad wrong.
I believe it. I seen the boss lose his temper before, but this was one of the worst times.
They arrived at Luella Hobson's house, and while Beaumont was inside picking up the attractive blonde widow, Preacher continued to speak with Lorenzo.
What did the late Mr. Hobson do for a living?
He owned a bank. I never did see how a fella could make a living holding money for other folks. I'd be too tempted to take off for the tall and uncut with all that cash. That's why I keep all my money here in the place nobody knows nothing about except me.
Yeah, well, bankers have been known to do that very thing. I don't have to worry about that myself.
You don't use banks neither.
I never had enough money to bother putting it in one. Being a fella like me, I don't expect I ever will.
When they reached Dupree's, the manager showed Beaumont to his usual table. Mrs. Hobson clung to Beaumont's arm so that her ample breast in a gown with a low neckline pressed against his sleeve. Preacher figured that deep down she was a lonely woman, and having a handsome rogue like Shad Beaumont pay attention to her probably meant the world to her. She'd be easy pickings once Beaumont finally decided to go ahead and pluck her clean. Preacher sat at a table nearby to keep an eye on Beaumont and watch out for any trouble that might come their way. He had a mug of beer that he sipped from time to time. During the evening, a number of people approached Beaumont's table, but they were only interested in saying hello and currying favor with a rich, powerful man. Beaumont sat back like a king holding court and received them. Mrs. Hobson preened at his side. They'd been there about an hour when Cleves strolled into the place. Preacher saw the gambler come in the door. Cleves' gaze swept over the room. His eyes paused for just a second as they passed over Preacher, and then Cleve continued looking around the room as if he hadn't even noticed the mountain man. In that brief second, though, Preacher had seen a flash of satisfaction in Cleve's eyes. The day had gone well, at least from the gambler's point of view. Cleve found an empty seat at one of the poker tables and soon was engrossed in the game. Preacher wanted to talk to him, but he didn't see any way of doing it without running the risk of provoking Beaumont's suspicions. After a while, Beaumont emptied the last of the brandy from the bottle that had been brought to him when he arrived. Preacher saw that and got to his feet.
You need another one, boss?
One of the girls can get it.
Well, they all look like they're busy. There's no need to wait. I'll fetch it.
Preacher went to the bar, which was crowded and busy. While he stood there waiting to ask one of the bartenders for another bottle of brandy, Cleve folded his hand and stood up.
I believe I'll take a break, gentlemen.
The gambler gathered up his winnings and ambled over to the bar, where he stood right next to Preacher.
Everything went well. Good work, my friend.
I gotta talk to you.
No, not here. Not in front of Beaumont. Later, when he goes to Jesse's.
He ain't said anything about going to Jesse's.
Trust me. He'll pay the place a visit later.
Preacher didn't know about that, but Cleve seemed to know what he was talking about. The bartender came up then.
Let me get a bottle of Beaumont's special brandy.
The bartender handed it over without hesitation. Preacher took the bottle back to Beaumont's table. Luella Hobson was already drunk. Preacher wasn't quite sure why Beaumont continued to ply her with liquor. She was already at the point where she would do anything he wanted her to do. She probably woulda, even without the brandy, just to keep him interested in her. He understood Beaumont's motives a little better once the carriage reached Luella's house an hour later.
Give me a hand here, Jim.
The poor woman was as drunk as she could be. Preacher helped Beaumont lift her from the carriage.
Take her inside. I'm in no mood for her usual games tonight.
God, then why'd you keep pouring brandy down her throat?
Why I do things is none of your business.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry, boss.
Preacher got an arm around Luella's waist and helped her make her unsteady way up the walk.
I'm gonna make you so happy, Chad. You see, I'll do anything you want. You can have me any way you like.
Well, look, I ain't Mr. Beaumont. Now, you go on inside, Mrs. Hobson, and get some sleep. You need it. You got a housekeeper?
A housekeeper? What do you need a housekeeper for?
Preacher knew he wasn't going to be able to get a straight answer out of her. A heavy-set black woman carrying a lantern peered out of the open door.
What in heaven's name? Oh, laws of mercy, what's wrong with Miss Hobson?
She had too much to drink. You work for her?
Expect you could say that, since her husband done bought me 5 years ago before he died.
Preacher practically shoved Luella into the slave's arms.
Well, you know how to look after her then. Good night.
Oh, wait just a minute! Is that Mr. Beaumont's carriage I see parked there in the road?
Yeah.
You telling me I ought to leave poor Ms. Luella alone? She's just a poor, lonely woman since her husband up and died, and he taking advantage of her.
Sure, I'll tell him.
No, you won't. I know better.
You just take good care of her. Maybe things will get better.
Not as long as that Chad Beaumont around. And you can tell him I said so.
A look of fear came over the woman's face as soon as those defiant words were out of her mouth.
Don't worry. I ain't gonna tell him that neither.
Preacher went back to the carriage and swung up onto the driver's seat next to Lorenzo. Beaumont leaned out the window.
Any problems?
None to speak of.
Fine. Lorenzo, drive to Jesse's place.
The carriage drew up in front of the big house a short time later. Beaumont climbed out of the vehicle as Preacher jumped down from the driver's box.
Keep your eyes open tonight. That trouble this afternoon tells me that my enemies are getting bolder. They're not afraid to move against me now. We may be in for a war, Jim. Are you up for that?
I'm up for whatever I need to be up for.
I hope so. Because even though they've started the war, whoever they are, I intend to finish it.
Mr. Beaumont, good to see you as always, sir. Donnelly.
Thomas Jesse, I'm here, William.
Well, of course, sir.
Shad!
Jesse was coming along the hall toward him, a brilliant smile on her face.
I didn't expect to see you again so soon.
I had a business reversal this afternoon, and I thought spending some time here might be just the thing to lift my spirits.
I'm sure we can find something pleasant to do that will make you forget all about any business problems, Shad.
No offense, Jesse. You know how I feel about you. But I think your charms aren't exactly what I need tonight.
No? Are you sure? You know I'm very good at what I do.
Yes, but I had something else in mind. Someone else. I thought I'd go up and see Cassandra. I had such a lovely evening with her the last time.
Preacher was standing behind and to one side of Beaumont. He felt a cold wave of hatred go through him. His hand moved toward the pistol tucked behind his belt. Jesse's eyes widened in apprehension as they flicked toward Preacher. He saw a pleading in him, pleading for him not to give the game away. Beaumont must have been too caught up in the evil thoughts filling in his head to notice Jesse's reaction, because he didn't look around at Preacher. With a supreme effort of will, Preacher pulled his hand away from his gun before he ever touched the butt of the pistol. He felt the muscles in his arm tremble from the suppressed urge to kill Beaumont.
That's not a good idea, Shad. Cassandra's indisposed.
Oh? I'm disappointed.
It'll be better if you come upstairs with me.
I suppose. We'll be here for a while, Donnelly. You can feel free to amuse yourself. After the day you've had, I'm sure you can use some diversion.
Sure, boss.
Jesse moved to link her arm with Beaumont's, and for a second, Beaumont couldn't see her face, but Preacher could. She mouthed the words thank you to him, then turned to go arm in arm toward the stairs with Beaumont. Preacher waited until Jesse and Beaumont had disappeared up the elegant curving staircase, then turned to look for Brutus. He didn't have to search. The big man must have been somewhere close by waiting for his opportunity. He was already there in the hallway.
Mr. Cleve wants to talk to you.
And I want to talk to him.
He's in one of the card rooms. This way.
Brutus led Preacher to one of the small rooms that opened off the corridor. Inside the room was a round table covered with green felt, lit by a lamp that hung from the ceiling above its center. The light was concentrated on the table and the chairs around it, leaving the rest of the room cloaked in shadows. Only one of the chairs was occupied at the moment. Cleve sat at the table, laying out a hand of solitaire.
I told you Beaumont would come here.
Brutus remained in the room, leaning against the panel and crossing his arms over his massive chest. That was just one more indication that he was aware of the plans Jesse and Cleve had made, as well as Preacher's involvement in them. Cleve wouldn't have allowed him to stay otherwise.
You figured he's so mad over what happened on the river he'd have to let it out by thrashing some poor gal?
That's right. Who did he choose? Oh, not Cassandra again. I hope she's just now getting back to something, approaching normal.
Well, that's who he picked, but Jesse wouldn't allow it. She went with him herself.
Jesse? Nothing to worry about. She won't let him get away with any ugly behavior.
How's she gonna stop him if he loses control of himself?
Well, Preacher, she'll kill him. We'd rather keep him alive, of course, so that we can ruin a few more of his plans and steal some more profits out from under him. But if she has to, she'll cut his throat. Or perhaps shoot off his sweetmeats with that little pistol she carries. That would be most appropriate. Now, the one thing she won't do is let him hurt her again.
So he wailed on her before, too, the way he did on Cassandra?
Oh, that's right. Now, what did you think turned her against him? Jesse's not a greedy person. Now, me, on the other hand...
What does she want, then, if not the money?
Oh, revenge, power, simply to be free of Beaumont, which she knows she never truly will be as long as he's alive. I'd say all of those things play a part in her actions.
You mean that's why she was willing to have that riverboat crew murdered, so they couldn't tell anybody about me double-crossing Beaumont?
You found out about that? The men we hired weren't supposed to take care of that part of the job until after you were gone.
Yeah, well, they didn't wait quite long enough. I heard the shots and went back and saw the riverboat burning.
Yeah. You have to admit it was effective.
Was the fire Jesse's idea?
What? No, Jesse didn't know anything about that, preacher. It was all my idea. You didn't think Jesse came up with that, did you? Why... Even if it had occurred to her that your secret needed to be protected. No, she wouldn't have given the order for those riverboat men to be killed.
Then why did you?
Because someone had to. When I threw in with Jesse on this, I knew I might have to make some of the difficult decisions that, well, she couldn't make.
Like murdering innocent men?
Beaumont has murdered innocent men. At least he's been responsible for it. Many times. And you saw what he did to Cassandra. Now, a man like that is worse than an animal because he knows what he's doing. He just doesn't care.
I don't like it.
Well, then it's a good thing you're not in charge here, isn't it?
What's next, goddammit?
Jesse and I haven't decided yet. Don't get flustered, preacher. We were thinking that, some of Beaumont's warehouses might just happen to burn down.
Yeah, well, you do something like that, you're going to risk burning down the whole damn town, including this place. Now, you don't want to take that chance. You'd be better off cleaning out those warehouses instead and moving the goods somewhere else.
That would involve killing the guards. Why, preacher, I thought you were opposed to that much bloodshed.
Look, I ain't gonna lose any sleep over somebody who takes money from Beaumont, knowing the sort of varmint he is. Anyway, you wouldn't have to kill the guard. You just knock him out.
Do you know anyone stealthy enough to accomplish something like that?
I might. I just might.
I'll talk it over with Jesse. But it's not a bad idea. That way the merchandise isn't destroyed. The profits from it go into our coffers instead, which makes me wonder just how big a share are you expecting out of all of this, preacher?
I ain't interested in the money. I'm after a different payoff.
Making Shad Beaumont's life a living hell and then, killing him?
Let's just figure out which of those warehouses you want to clean out first.
3 nights later, in the dark of the moon, Preacher stole through an alley near the riverfront. He had a bandana tied over the lower half of his face like a damned highwayman, which he didn't like, but it was necessary to conceal his identity, because it was possible someone might see him and recognize him if he didn't wear it. His destination was a warehouse full of stolen goods supplied by a ring of thieves working for Beaumont. Jesse had agreed with the plan Preacher and Cleve hatched, and now Preacher was carrying out his part of it. But he had waited until after midnight to slip out of his quarters at Beaumont's house and make his way here. According to what Jesse had been able to find out, there were 2 guards outside the warehouse and 2 more inside. She knew this because Beaumont's men sometimes patronized her house when they had been lucky at cards and were particularly flush. A whore could always find a way to make a man talk and never even realize just how much information he was pulling. Evidently, things had gone well 3 nights earlier when Jesse took Beaumont upstairs. Beaumont hadn't given in to his rage while he was with her. Since the ambush during the attempted riverboat robbery, he had resumed his normal appearance for the most part, although he spent some of the time asking questions in waterfront dives, trying to find out who was behind what had happened. Preacher accompanied him on those trips and saw firsthand how Beaumont wasn't having any luck with his investigation. Jesse and Cleve had done a good job of covering their tracks. For a man who had crawled into engine camps and slit the throats of several warriors without any of the other engines knowing a thing about it until morning, sneaking up on these warehouse guards didn't pose much of a challenge for Preacher. Two men sat on kegs near the doors, one on either side. And while they might have been tough gents, their senses didn't come anywhere near being as keen as those of a Blackfoot or Crow warrior. Preacher slipped along the brick wall of the building until he was close enough to reach out and touch the nearer of the two guards. Preacher struck swiftly and without warning, his left arm shooting out the loop around the guard's neck and jerked the man to his feet. The other guard reacted to the sound of the overturning keg.
Rice?
He quickly got to his feet, and Preacher threw the guard he was holding into the second man. Their heads cracked together, and both men went limp. That left the two inside. Preacher knew the doors were barred on the inside, so he had to get the other two guards to open up. Preacher saw the glow of lantern light seeping through the narrow crack between the door, and he bent and hoisted one of the unconscious men to his feet. There was a viewing slot cut into the warehouse door, and when it was thrust back and a bar of light shone through it, Preacher stood halfway behind the man he held, so that the guard inside the warehouse couldn't get a good look at him.
Something's wrong with Rice. He just moaned and fell over. Might be his heart.
Son of a bitch, hold on.
Bring him in here. Maybe one of us ought to fetch the sawbones.
Preacher kept his head ducked down as he lugged the limp form through the narrow opening.
Yeah, I better not tell the boss about this. We ain't supposed to open up for any reason. Rice still owes me $2 from that last poker game, though, and by God, I don't want him dying before he pays me.
Well, here, see if he's got it on him.
Preacher shoved Rice at the guard, who stumbled backwards from the impact right into his companion. Preacher whirled and kicked the man with the lantern in the belly. Preacher swung around in time to see that the second guard had gotten tangled up with Rice. The man Preacher had kicked in the belly was trying to work a pistol out from behind his belt. Preacher brought the barrel of his pistol crashing down on the man's head. Preacher quickly went and retrieved the other guard from outside. When he had all four men inside, he used rope he had brought with him to tie their hands and feet. Then, pulled more bandanas from his pocket and blindfolded them as well so they wouldn't be able to see what was going on if they regained consciousness before the men hired by Jesse and Cleve finished cleaning out the stolen merchandise from the warehouse. Then Preacher opened the door a little, stuck the lantern out, and waved it from side to side three times. A moment later, several big freight wagons rolled toward the warehouse. Preacher was surprised to see that Cleve himself was at the reins of one of the wagons.
Good work. You sure you didn't have to kill any of them?
I said I wouldn't.
Well, we'll handle it from here.
Them fellas better be alive when you leave. They ain't any threat to you.
Oh, of course. You have my word.
Beaumont was livid the next morning when one of his men came to the house to deliver the bad news about the warehouse robbery.
They did what? I'm gonna kill them. All of them!
Preacher and Lorenzo were having breakfast down in the kitchen.
Oh, hell. Something else gone wrong. Starting to seem like this house got a hoodoo on it.
Yeah, I reckon I better go see what it's all about.
Preacher climbed the stairs to Beaumont's room.
Coming!
Beaumont stood by the window, wearing a dressing gown and holding a glass in one hand and a bottle of whiskey in the other.
Kinda early in the day for that who hit John, ain't it, boss?
Not after the sort of news that I've had this morning. The time of day doesn't really matter right now.
More trouble?
Someone broke into one of my warehouses last night, knocked out the guards, and emptied it of everything that was in it. It cost me $5,000, maybe more. And I know who did it, too.
You finally found somebody willing to talk?
No, but I figured it out at last. There's only one person who could be to blame for everything that's happened lately. Preacher.
I don't reckon I know who that is.
You haven't heard of Preacher? He's a son-of-a-bitch mountain man who's been taking great delight in ruining my plans over the past year or so. Every time I've tried to make any inroads into the fur trade in the Rockies, he's stopped me.
Huh, you think he's come to St. Louis?
Well, it makes sense. About 6 months ago, I sent some agents to the mountains to take over a trading post and settlement that's gotten started out there. And Preacher made sure that didn't happen. Quite a few people were killed in the process, though, and I'm willing to bet that he holds a grudge against me because of it. That's the sort of thing an uneducated lout like him would do.
Oh, yeah, I reckon. Well, what's this fella look like?
Well, I've never seen him myself, you understand. But he's been described to me on several occasions. He's supposed to be almost 7 feet tall, a giant of a man, with a black beard that comes halfway down his chest.
Sounds like I'll know him if I see him, and you can bet your ass I'll keep my eyes open for him if you think he's the one causing all the trouble.
Oh, I'm convinced of it. And I'm going to take steps to put a stop to it as well. We'll be going out and making the usual rounds today. I'm sure that preacher is spying on me. And I'm going to show him that no matter what he does, he can't get the better of me.
All right, boss. I'll be ready to go whenever you are.
The fact that Beaumont had someone to direct his rage at now seemed to have calmed him down a little bit. Later in the day, after checking on some of Beaumont's other illegal enterprises, the two of them went to the warehouse where Preacher had been the night before. Beaumont stood just inside the open doors with his hands on his hips, looking around at the empty space where thousands of dollars worth of stolen property had been stored. The men who had been on guard duty at the warehouse the night before were waiting there, and for a moment Preacher worried that Beaumont intended to kill him for letting someone clean the place out. Instead, Beaumont just questioned him, asking all four men how they had been taken by surprise and if they had gotten a look at the man who knocked them out. Tompkins and Rice, the two men who had been on duty outside, both replied that they hadn't seen the man at all. He had knocked him out before they even caught a glimpse of his face. Beaumont turned to the other two.
How about you? Did you see him? Was he a giant with a long black beard?
No, sir. He's a pretty good-sized fella, but he wasn't anywhere near that big. I couldn't really see his face because he wore a hat pulled down low and had some sort of cloth tied around his nose and mouth. I think I would have seen the beard sticking out from under it, though, if it was as long as you say.
Well, how was he dressed? Was he wearing buckskins?
No, sir. Just normal working clothes, I reckon. I didn't see anything unusual about him.
Maybe one of those caps made from the skin of a raccoon with the tail still attached to it?
Both men shook their heads. Preacher and Beaumont quickly walked back to the waiting carriage.
Damn it! I was sure it had to be him. But even if he wasn't the one who snuck in here, he had to be involved. I can feel it in my bones.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right, boss.
Preacher opened the door to the carriage, which was parked in front of the warehouse.
Where do you want to go now?
Jesse's. I need to think about this. Jesse's smart for a woman. Maybe she can help me figure it out.
Lorenzo pointed the carriage toward Jesse's place. As it rolled through the streets, the elderly driver spoke to Preacher.
Man, boy, sure been going on about this here Preacher fella. I reckon I'd sure hate to be him, if the boss ever gets his hands on him.
Well, from the sound of it, he's a pretty slippery gent. You don't want to be found. Boss may not be able to find him.
You say that because you don't know the boss the way I do. He's like an old bulldog. Once he gets his teeth into something, it ain't no way to make him let go until he's good and ready.
When they reached Jesse's, Preacher jumped down from the driver's box and opened the carriage door for Beaumont.
You gonna be here long enough for me to take the horses around back to the stable, boss?
I don't know how long I'll be here. Just wait right out front here.
Yes, sir.
Beaumont marched up the walk to the front door. Preacher followed a couple of steps behind him, looking around as he always did, as if on the alert for an ambush or anything else that might threaten Beaumont. Brutus was waiting for him at the door, as usual.
Good to see you, Mr. Beaumont. Would you like me to fetch Miss Jessie for you?
No, I'll just go back to her office if that's where she is.
Yes, she's back there. I can tell her you're here.
No need.
Preacher started after Beaumont, only to have Brutus get in his way.
Why don't you wait in the parlor, Mr. Donnelly? Got some good-looking gals in there to keep you company if you want.
Preacher saw a worried look in the man's eyes that made him aware that Brutus was trying to tell him something. He didn't know what it was, though, and he didn't get a chance to ask about it neither, because Beaumont paused and glanced over his shoulder at the two of them.
Donnelly, come with me. You can carouse with those whores some other time.
Yes, sir.
Careful. Turn your face away when you go past the parlor.
Preacher didn't know for sure what was going on, and he didn't have a chance to try to figure it out, because at that moment, two things happened. Jessie appeared at the far end of the hallway, perhaps having heard Beaumont's voice. And closer, between her and Beaumont, a man stepped out of the parlor into the corridor with his arm around the waist of one of the whores. That man was a tall, barrel-chested gent with a long, ragged brown beard that looked like it hadn't been trimmed in a while. The man's gaze landed on Preacher and froze. Recognition flashed in his eyes. Preacher knew him, too, but he hadn't expected to ever see the man again. The last time he'd laid eyes on him had been during the engine attack on the wagon train. The man who had just come out of the parlor was Buckhalter, the renegade wagon master who'd been working for Beaumont.
Preacher! Damn it, there he is now! Preacher!
Where? Donnelly! Preacher's here! Grab him!
Donnelly? What the hell are you talking about? That's Preacher right there!
Buckhalter clawed at a pistol stuck behind his belt.
Oh!
Suddenly, Buckhalter fell to his knees and pitched forward, blood welling from a hole in the back of his head. Preacher caught a glimpse of Jessie standing at the end of the hall, powder smoke curling from the barrel of the little pistol in her hand as she held her arm extended out in front of her. Preacher was about to fire at Beaumont when a big shape suddenly leaped forward and got in the way. Brutus lunged at Beaumont just as the man pulled the trigger. Brutus slammed backwards into Preacher.
A trap! It's a damn trap! You betrayed me, you bitch!
Preacher tried to lift his pistol and shove Brutus aside so he could get a shot at Beaumont, but the man ducked through the parlor door and vanished. By the time Preacher reached his feet and hurried to the parlor door, Beaumont was gone. The front window, which had been covered by heavy curtains, was shattered, and the curtains had been pulled down.
Beaumont dived out the window to escape!
Brutus!
Preacher wheeled around and saw Jessie on her knees next to the big man. She put her trembling hands on either side of his face and turned his head so that he appeared to be looking at her. Only now his wide, staring eyes were empty and lifeless. As Preacher watched, a large red stain continued spreading across the front of Brutus's white shirt. Preacher reached down and grasped Jesse's arm.
We gotta get out of here. You heard Beaumont. He thinks you're to blame for what just happened here.
I am. It's all my fault. Brutus is dead.
No, it ain't. But we can worry about that later. Beaumont's got men working for him all over St. Louis. He won't have to go very far before he finds some of them and heads back here. Come on.
Jessie let Preacher tug her to her feet.
You're right. With his temper, he's liable to come back with a bunch of men and burn the place down. We've to leave. Find some place to hide.
Where's Cleve?
I don't know. Maybe at Dupree's. Not here, though. He should be safe, at least for a while. Shad may not suspect him of being involved in this. We need to find him and warn him.
Later. For now, let's just get you out of here. And Casey, too.
Casey?
Cassandra.
What does she have to do with this?
You saw how Beaumont was when he lost that shipment of cotton. He might have beaten her to death that night if he'd gotten anywhere near her. How mad do you reckon he's going to be about you and me double-crossing him?
You're right. He'll take his rage out on her. All the other girls should get out of here, too, just in case.
Yeah, probably wouldn't be a bad idea.
Jesse quickly went around to all the girls, informing them that they needed to get out of the house and find a new place to work. Jesse was getting out of town herself. She met Preacher at the top of the staircase.
Come on, let's get... What did you call her? Casey?
Yeah, that's what she told me to call her.
I wonder why she never mentioned that to me.
I don't know.
What are we gonna do about Brutus?
Ain't nothing we can do. We can't tote his body with us.
No, of course not.
Jesse started toward the door of Casey's room, but the door swung open before she got there. Casey had heard the shots and the rest of the commotion downstairs and had been watching fearfully through a narrow crack. Her face, with its fading bruises, was pale as she looked at Jesse and Preacher.
What's wrong, Jim?
Get your gear together, Casey. You're coming with us.
What are you talking about? I have a job here.
The house is closed. For good. I'm leaving. And I'm not going to leave you here for Shad.
Oh, well, give me a minute. I'll grab a few things and they'll be ready to go.
Casey ducked back into the room.
Jesse, do you have a carriage or a wagon? Something we can use to get you and Casey away from here?
There's a buggy in the barn out back. I think all three of us can crowd into it.
Preacher nodded. He wanted to get the two women to Uncle Dan Sullivan, who could be counted on to do his best to keep them safe. That would leave Preacher free to come back to St. Louis and settle things once and for all with Shad Beaumont. Casey emerged from her room a minute later, carrying a small carpet bag. She had pulled on a gray dress instead of the robe she had been wearing a few minutes earlier. She looked pale and frightened, but composed, a description that fit Jesse as well.
I'm ready. Thank you for not leaving me here.
We'd never do that. Let's go down the rear stairs.
The trio quickly began to descend the stairs.
What about Brutus? Is he coming with us?
I'm sorry, Cassandra. Brutus is dead.
Dead?
One of those shots you must have heard killed him.
Oh, well, who fired it?
Who do you think?
Beaumont.
That's right.
Where is he now?
We don't know. He busted through a window and lit a shuck out of here. But I'm betting he didn't go far, and it won't be long until he's back.
They reached the house's rear entrance. Preacher gripped his pistol tightly.
Best let me go first to make sure nobody's lurking out there.
Be careful, Preacher.
Preacher? I thought your name was Jim Donnelly. Or did Jesse mean that you're a minister?
Oh, not hardly. Preacher's just what they call me.
Just like you evidently prefer to be called Casey.
Oh, I'll explain that later.
Yeah, well, you'd best. There sure as hell ain't no time now. We already spent too much time gabbing and not enough time taking off for the tall and uncut.
It was late afternoon, so there were no shadows for a bushwhacker to hide in. On the other hand, there was no darkness to conceal the movements of Preacher and the two women either. He pivoted from side to side, the pistol leveled and ready, but there was no sign of danger. For the moment, this quiet neighborhood appeared to be safe.
Come on!
Preacher hustled the ladies toward the barn.
Can you hitch up the buggy horse?
Of course.
I'll help. I used to live on a farm, so I know all about hitching up a team.
Preacher stopped just inside the barn doorway and turned around to keep an eye on the house.
Just get that buggy ready to go.
The women got to work while Preacher watched for trouble. The smooth, swift efficiency with which they got the horse hitched to the buggy told Preacher that Casey'd been telling the truth about knowing what she was doing. Within just a few minutes, they had the buggy ready to roll. Casey's carpet bag was stuffed behind the seat.
Aren't you taking anything with you, Jesse?
There's nothing in that house that wasn't paid for by Shad Beaumont. I don't want any of it.
The trio got up into the wagon.
Yeah, I reckon I understand that feeling. Jesse, you better handle the reins in case I have to do any shooting.
All right.
Yo!
When they reached the front of the house, Preacher saw that Beaumont's carriage was gone. He had expected as much. Beaumont had probably run straight back to the vehicle and ordered Lorenzo to get away from there as fast as he could. Because Beaumont believed that he had walked into a trap, he probably thought there were more men in the house who wanted to kill him. It would have been nice to have had some allies, Preacher thought, instead of just him and a couple of women and an old man declaring open war against the most powerful criminal in St. Louis, maybe the most powerful one west of the Mississippi. But at least things were out in the open now. Preacher couldn't help but be a little relieved by that. He didn't know how Beaumont would react to what had happened, but it seemed likely that he would gather up a small army of hired killers and come after his sworn enemy.
Head west out of town. I'll show you where to go.